recently, I mean, this is not manipulation at all. This is the opposite. This is people escaping the dollar. And I was speaking with a gentleman who had, you know, was a very profound currency trader and exchanger for a huge New York bank. And they move just massive, you know, billions and billions of dollars per client of money around. And he's heavily into the metals now. And we were just talking about how all of the currencies, the great deception on currencies. If a person's a currency trader, they, you know, their only interest is the spread. But the fact of the matter is, all of our currencies are heading towards zero rapidly. There's what's called the dollar index. It's actually a comparative index where they take the U.S. dollar against a basket of world currencies, things like the British sterling pound and the euro, and they used to be, let me think, let's see if I can find out here real quick. I want to guess, but I don't want to be inaccurate. All right, the dollar index is made of, okay, here we got the euro, the yen, the pound, the Canadian dollar, the Swedish krona, and the Swiss franc. The thing about that is that they're all fiat currencies, and so there's a double deception going here. So when they move currencies back and forth, in other words, when they show the dollar at 96 and then it's down to 89, and people are like, "Oh no, the dollar's down. We better move our money into the euro or whatever," folks. That is all by design. I mean, it's absolutely all by design. They have, so you got a double-edged sword. One, you think that you're moving your money into a better source or into a safer currency, but all you're doing is playing into exactly what they, being the central banks, want you to be playing into. And that may, you know, most of you are like, "Well, I'm not into that." Well, we all are. We get into it with the pricing of items. We get into it with investment stuff. We'll see. A lot of times you'd be surprised at the fluctuation in stocks relative to the closing unit value of a dollar for the day. And so the bottom line is, I guess, to keep it simple, your dollar is losing spending power in a dramatic way, at a level that is very astounding and completely inconsistent with what the consumer price index tells us. So we get told regularly that, you know, inflation is down. And I mean, we don't, you know, I'll be honest, we may not get told that much anymore. They may, because I don't hear it a lot. But what I do hear is interest rates are low, okay? Well, if interest rates are low and they're not mentioning inflation, that's not a good thing. It's kind of tricky because I sit here and I listen to people go, you know, the most important thing right now is to not be in debt. And from a historic perspective, at least in my own career, I'm like, yeah, I know debt, you know, the debtor is servant to the lender. But if you're paying 3% and real inflation is 8 or 9, maybe that makes sense over the long run. You look at a lot of these people's mortgages and whatnot, you know, that they've been in the past and the prices they've paid for houses. I mean, I know people that are, you know, have been in their house 6 or 7 years and they've already got, you know, 50% profit made on the house. The interest rate might have been a little strong, maybe 5 or 6 at the time, but now they can refinance at 3. So I'm not so sure. I know that we've seen some people literally using home equity lines of credit to purchase precious metals. I've also seen people, you know, I talked to kind of a customer client friend the other day who was asking me, who's, you know, been pretty prominent over the years, is asking me, he has a couple mortgages on a house and a waterfront home, but he makes a tremendous amount of money. And he's also asking about saving or paying down the mortgage. Well, the thing is, when you pay down your mortgage, one thing you got to realize is, and I know this is a little out of the norm for me, but this is kind of my background, is the money stuff. But you got to remember, when you pay down your mortgage, you can't get that money back. It's neat to be debt-free, but it's terrible to be debt-free and cash broke, because guess what happens? You get, you know, if something comes up, you end up having to scramble to cover that financial base, you know, to get it covered. You might have someone you can call and borrow some money or whatever, but in general, when you're dealing with an asset like precious metals, like precious metals-based assets, which is the sector right now is, I would say, looking pretty good, because obviously the precious metals have been on a pretty solid rise, you know, gold and silver and all that, palladium and everything. And, but there's sectors of it. I talk about semi-numismatic stuff, and we tell people we build portfolios, and some people's imagination goes a little wild. And they think we're talking about, you know, $2,000 pennies or something. Our goal is value-based, okay? And I have my hands in every package right now, and it's very value-based. We watch the markets. We know the markets. We sell. We're putting into every portfolio as much as we can, depending on, you know, what people want. But items whose value should be rare and collectible, but is trading at or near the precious metals base price. You know, there's all kinds of coins out there like that. There's a lot of cool gold, you know, U.S. modern commemoratives and old commemoratives. So there's just a lot of different, the old pre-33 gold I talk about. We don't have truckloads of it because everything that comes in goes out. I mean, we've been here 25 years, so there's a lot coming in. And there's a lot more going out. You know, but we look for that. We like dollars. There's days that we're like, wow, look at this, man. What a rip, you know, what a great steal for an investor. And that's what we want to do. And then there's also, when we do larger portfolios, we'll put in at the top 10%, maybe some special items, maybe modern, you know, some kind of a high relief gold coin from the mint, or, you know, something that's a little low managed that has good long-term potential and is also still within reasonable alignment. And sometimes we'll throw in some Carson City dollars, or some people will do portfolios where they just want Morgans, you know, and we've got all kinds of Morgans, from average run-of-the-mill circulated stuff to better date rarities and by the rolls. But everything, again, it's all hand-picked and hand-selected. Everything sells at wholesale. The way we operate, I was telling my people the other day, I am completely honest when I say I know of no other place in America that operates as we do. We honestly try, I think, with all of our might, to give the client our best. And at the same time, you know, we're looking out for, I mean, we want to give you our absolute best, and we basically want to treat you like we'd treat our closest relatives. That's really what we're doing. We want to give you stuff that, you know, that lasts. I mean, we got to look you in the eye. We got to look you in the eye coming and going, you know, and that's important to us. And that's the thing. People go, well, you have to do that or it hurt your business. No, even if it was like, it didn't even matter. It's just how we operate. Nobody in the nation sells like we sell. We give you the service and knowledge and experience, and we don't have a boiler room full of phone solicitors. I get some people that call and they're getting hit on the phone with stuff. Folks, just be aware of that stuff. I mean, please, you know, if someone's calling you to sell you some special coin deal, it's not a deal. And 99% of the time when people have the courage to call me and to check, they always call after they gave their credit card. And 99% of the time when they find that out, they can cancel the credit card and buy four or five of the same item from us for the same price. And then they usually don't do it because they want the hype. And so you don't buy for hype. You don't buy because you think you're getting gold at half price. Folks, you can't. Gold is liquid. It may be hard to comprehend, but is a dumb example I've used because it's fiat currency, but it's like saying, you know what? I found a guy who sells me $100 bills at $50 a piece. Well, the first thing I'd say to you is, well, get ready to go to jail because they're not real, you know? And that's the same with gold. I mean, it costs what it costs. These are hard liquid assets. They're worth what they're worth. It's not like real estate. The energy is in work. Okay, real estate, the value's in the dirt that God made. And then you add on top of that the value of the construction of the builder. But then when the market goes to tar or bad, the value of the structure can basically dissipate almost or diminish drastically. But then it'll recoup. I can't believe this COVID thing. I do not understand why this has created a massive real estate bubble other than it's the absolute rush to hard assets and commodities. I think people are, you know, the stock market rising, folks, that's hyperinflation. Trump is just pumping and pumping out cash. Every dollar that goes out there ends up back in the banks, okay? You got to think about it. Every dollar people spend, I mean, we've got clients recently that are complaining that local banks like BECU, Boeing Employees Credit Union, which apparently, you know, credit unions now take everybody. But he went to one. He wanted to come in here. They said, oh, we're sorry. We're a cashless branch. So they're trying to get everything away from cash. I mean, they're almost forcing it on us. And that, to me, is a significant concern. I mean, you lose all your autonomy. You lose your ability to go anywhere. They can shut you down. That is the whole thing. Folks, if you look at this whole COVID thing, this is the grand scheme. And I hope that each and every one of you out there can have the spiritual eyes to see what's going on behind the veil. I mean, this is not real. This is an absolute farce. It's the flu of the year. They've done it back during, you know, SARS, and you remember, you know, the bird flu, whatever it was, and then the swine flu, and remember Ebola. They were practicing. They had us freaking out. The news just chases it down, drinks the Kool-Aid. They bring a couple guys back from Africa in these great big hazmat tubes. You know, you think you just found an alien. You think they just dug an alien up, and all the people running it off the plane are on in these huge hazmat suits, and you're just like, oh my gosh, it's an alien. It's going to mutate and take us all over. That's what they're giving us the impression of with this stuff. This is the garbage that they're feeding us. And they practice and they learn. And why is it that, you know, the bird flu, whatever that one was, it showed up across at the cafe, across the road from the Navy Biological Testing Center, you know? And there's been others that always have these real coincidental links. But, you know, it's just coincidence, right? This is a farce. And they have marketed this up so high, and it's going to go through November. They literally think what they're trying to do is they're trying to set the bar so low, okay? They're trying to hang this complete act, an absolute Broadway play on Trump, which happens to be devastating the economy of the world. It happens to be personally destroying every individual life at some level. I mean, airlines now are shutting down. They've been operating under these ridiculous restricted guidelines, you know, with one person every six seats. And I mean, they're going broke, you know. This is absolute lunacy. And you know what? They're going to keep going, oh, you got it, you got it, you got it. Well, yeah, people get it. It's like the stinking flu. If they did this with the flu, and guess what? Then, you know, 85-year-old grandma whatever gets it on top of all of her other stuff, and maybe she's on her way out and she has it, but her body is going to be picking up everything because her immune system's broken down. She's on her way out. I'm sorry, but that's just what happens. And that's why the median age from this of death is 85. It doesn't exist. And there, if you think about what the Democrats do, they lower the bar all the way down. What did they do when they got Obama in office? I mean, they had, and these are the masters of production. David Axelrod. He was the guy who helped Obama. He helped Obama all the way along. I mean, they got like, during his political career, they got like four of his opponents to simply bow out before the election by pounding them with false accusations, just like they did Herman Cain. They took an analysis of the election back during, 12. You can tell who they analyzed, who their polls or their internal polling determined was the biggest threat to Obama, and it was Herman Cain, a very brilliant, likable, nice black man who had been a Fed Reserve chairman, of all things, but he was level-headed. He was the 999 guy. You know, he wanted a 9% income tax, a 9% sales tax, and a 9% excise tax. And he said, that would cover all of our needs. Well, wouldn't that be nice? We all just get a flat 9% income tax and a 9% national sales tax. It may sound bad, and you might be like, well, we don't want a national sales tax. Well, our income taxes are horrendous, and they're unevenly distributed, et cetera, et cetera. And so the Democrats, what they're doing on this thing, if you think, like I said, Obama, all of a sudden this great big financial crisis drops. You know, we've got the real estate bubble before that just explodes, right? Right before our eyes. And then they have the huge TARP bailout. Well, by the time they get the TARP bailout done, Hank Paulson, who was previously the CEO of Goldman Sachs, which many refer to as government Sachs, and I can tell you in a minute why they do it anyway. So he had become Hank Paulson had become the Secretary of the Treasury. Ben Bernanke was the Fed chairman at the time after Alan Greenspan. These two got together, concocted this thing where they'd get all these trillions of dollars for a mortgage bailout. And by the time they got the money, it's too late to help the mortgages. So they pumped all that money, $5.8 trillion or whatever it was, that Obama pushed through before he was president. They pushed it to all their banker buddies. They just lined all their pockets, made them loaded. And then they created a new system. If banks left their money in what we call overnight sweep accounts, they would get paid at the time like 2.whatever%. Well, that doesn't sound like much to you or me. First of all, it's not their money. Secondly, there's a lot of it. Thirdly, their cost of funds was, you know, at the time, let's say hypothetically 4%, and they were loaning at 7% in mortgages. Well, there's at least a percent overhead, if not more. They can put the money there and make a 2% profit or go out and loan the heck out of it and fight like a dog to make a 2% profit. So they made it so banks had no incentive to put the money out. That's how they could afford after that to sit around and do all the Occupy Wall Street and all that stuff. They were making all the money based on the sweeps. They didn't need, I mean, this thing was so set up. And it made Obama, this is how bad Obama was. He starts out with this absolute devastated, terrible economy, gets a massive, massive booster shot from the Fed, the biggest ever. You know, the actual TARP fund bailout was larger than the entire deficit, okay? So we had a deficit of 3.4 or 3.8 trillion under Bush. They added 5.8 trillion. So the actual bailout was almost double, or at least about 170% of all the currency ever created by the United States of America or through the Fed in the history of the Fed and the government too, because it becomes nominal. It was that big. He infused our economy with that much money. You think about that. And he still was just limping along. He couldn't get the economy going. So they claim all these crazy things because they go from the lowest of the low. They pick the worst month and then they pick the best month and go, look what we did. No. Trump goes in there and just puts, you know, clean, gets the Obama mess, never trashes on it. Obama and Biden are just continuously railing. Now, it's interesting that they're, you know, they railed constantly against Bush. Everything was Bush's fault, Bush Jr. And now they're out and they're claiming all the good things are theirs. All the bad things, those are Trump's, but the good things are theirs. Folks, this has been back in like 2008, I believe, maybe 12. I did this research on which party had dominated and how often during the four-year terms. Out of 104, or maybe it was, anyway, let's just say since the turn of the century, I'm going to pick numbers I know are close or not exact. But say out of 100 years or 104 years, the Democrats had majority control of all three houses. In other words, two out of three, something like 92 out of 104 years. And I went through and read all this rhetoric and did this. Every time they had control, it was the same thing. They griped and complained and pointed fingers, messed things up. Look at all these cities around the U.S. There, do you know the 10 most violent cities that are undergoing riots? These are cities that are all Democratic run and historically Democratic run. So out of the 92 out of 104 years in our nation, they had blame, destroy. Get a Republican in there, every time the numbers start coming around, and here goes the Dems. Just attack. It is absolutely their MO. It is socialistic mannerism. That is their method of operation. It's, you know, there's, like I said, the Frankfurt School, even Saul Alinsky, all these guys, this is their system. So when you have an opponent constantly working, it's like if someone was constantly trying to break into your house and they had multiple people working on it and you had to run around by yourself and try to catch them doing it and every time try to make sure that place is secure. This is how the enemy attacks politics. They have this agenda. They just shoot so much stuff at you. First of all, it's so overwhelming. They can tell you a lie and you believe it. That's the Joseph Goebbels thing. The bigger and more ridiculous, more fantastical and outer space the lie, the more we drink it up because it's just beyond our comprehension, perhaps. I'm not sure. I'm not a psychologist, but there's a reason we do it. And they just keep this constant barrage, whether it's on, you know, you look at the stuff they're fighting for. I mean, sticking up for vandalous rioters, sticking up, you know, the minute a black guy gets shot, they jump right in, you know, and they take that cause. And I mean, folks, we have a justice system. And let me tell you something. When something like that hits national TV, it's going to get taken care of. I mean, one way or the other. Why not wait? Why not wait and let the justice system prevail? Is there corruption in the justice system? You betcha. Was there a long period of time where cops were getting away literally with murder? You betcha. Do cops do that regularly? No. It's absolute anomaly. And sometimes, I mean, I looked at that guy that shot that Blake in the back seven times. I mean, they say he was running to grab stuff and everything. I don't know. I think guys just get in the heat of the moment and they do things and they're like, what, you know, I understand what they're worried about. Oh, he's going to get a gun. He's going to get this. But it's just, sometimes it's just too much. It's like, let the guy run away. Just let the guy run away. You're going to get him. At that point, he hadn't proved he was a threat to society. I know later on they find a knife in the car and all that, but they didn't know about that knife. And it wasn't an issue anyway. The truth of it is, if you have a gun, you know, I won't go down that. I have, like, extensive martial arts training, and it's like, and we did for years training of the local police. That's been in a long time, but in hand-to-hand before they started doing the government contracts. But, you know, diffusing the situation, de-escalation is the key. And you have to ask yourself, is your life really in danger? I mean, you're not looking for an excuse to hurt people as the rioters. You're looking for a way to protect people even from themselves. I think that's one thing that's changed. There's people are going to get in a mental state where they're a threat to themselves. If they're not proven to really have already proven to be a threat to others, then we don't have to worry about them. And if they are, then we got to take care of it. So, but you know, in 90, you don't judge an agency, as I mentioned, by the anomaly. You just don't do it. If you hear somebody that works for a big company does something stupid, you don't say, oh, that's it, I'm boycotting the whole company. I'm going to defund the company. I guess the liberals might, but it doesn't make sense. Each person in that profession operates autonomously. They're trained. They need to be trained more, of course. That would be terrific, especially if they're trained properly. When things really change, to my knowledge, is when the training in hand-to-hand combat protection, if you want to call it that, and all the different techniques, transferred from the local dojos that they'd hire or very competent individuals, hopefully. And I suppose in some areas they weren't hiring the right guys, you know. And so they hired government contractors, which are ex-military. And they're trained to kill. I mean, they're just trained to kill. That's what they're trained to do. And I would not want anything less for my military personnel. But when they come into the pit with these guys and they're training to kill. They're training them for the absolute worst possible case scenario. Great. Why aren't we supposed to prepare for the worst, hope for the best, and be able to tell the difference? And so that, to me, is one thing that's gotten a little, I think, that's an area that justice reform exists. There are a lot of good cops out there. Tons. Great guys. And a lot of them have the self-control and the self-pride and the self-confidence to know when not to beat a guy up when he's got cuffs on or, you know, or whatever it is. I mean, some of these guys, when they're doing that stuff, it's just not right. I mean, there's something not wrong in that. But that's all we're going to see. Millions and millions of hours, folks, of video of cops operating that never hits the air. Because they're doing it right. And then we get a few hours of terrible, heinous things. And so hopefully, I hope enough of you know better than to just, you know, draw a conclusion. I said long ago on CNN, I was like, saying that they make everybody think everything's in their backyard. People start to behave differently. They see something silly or ridiculous, and they start freaking out, locking their doors because there's a wasp in, you know, Alabama, and they start, I mean, it's just, or kids are shooting something, and it just absolutely, it's too much for our minds to comprehend how far away it is, and to comprehend the number of people between us and them, and how many people are on the earth, and we only hear about these tragic, horrible situations when, you know, ultimately everyone's going to die. I mean, whether you like it or not, there she be. It's, you know, it's appointed for every man to die once and then face judgment, I think is what the Bible tells us, right? We're all going to die. And so we make such a big deal out of it when somebody dies tragically and it fits our political agenda. And then you think of all these other heinous, all the things people have died from in government hands. It's unbelievable. All the, you know, the poison and the garbage. I mean, and then another thing, you know, this vaccination thing I covered last week. I mean, they're putting that propaganda out there. I was hearing on the radio today, oh, they're going to have this vaccine so fast. And, you know, they're talking about how really helpful this is, as if it matters. But they're going to skip phase 3 and, a.k.a. phase 4, studies just to rush it through because they already know that the disease is so bad, and we don't need to go that far. It's like if there's even a chance it'll help, we need to just, they say, we need to just pass it and approve it and get it out to the people. You ever heard of Gulf War Syndrome? Gulf War Syndrome is where they were afraid that Saddam was going to, use biological weapons of whatever form. They were just convinced that he was going to do it. And so they created a vaccine. And that vaccine was all the men who got that vaccine had a horrible, long, drawn-out, miserable death. It says here, underlying, okay, blah, blah, blah. From my understanding, and this may be right or wrong, let's see. They're showing here, I'm trying to see how many died. Approximately, okay, check this out. Approximately 250,000 of the 697,000 U.S. veterans who served in the 1991 Gulf War, when was this written, were afflicted with enduring chronic multiple system illnesses, ultimately leading to death and other serious consequences. 250,000. Okay, I thought it was 100,000. This was vaccine driven. There was a number of squadrons from Texas that something went wrong. On their way over to the Gulf War, they were all supposed to get this vaccine. And no one knows what's in it. Government will never release it, but they're trying to get you ready for anthrax and everything else. Well, you can't make a vaccine against anthrax. Who knows what they did, okay? What was worse is it was contagious. So these guys would come home and pass it on to their wife, but no one knew what it was. There was no bacteria, no virus. What is this? What did they create? We don't even know. Is it some kind of nanobacteria? The garbage that Bill Gates keeps talking about? They're talking about organisms that are now trackable themselves. So you don't need an RFID chip injected into somebody. You can use this organic plasma, whatever they are, and put them in people, and you can actually pick them up with a detection device. This is scary. This stuff's crazy. So when you have 250,000 guys die who got this government-mandated, not fully tested vaccine, 250,000, a miserable, terrible death. That's a lot. It's not a lot. It's heinous. They never acknowledged it. They said, maybe Saddam did this or that. Well, what I was going to say, there was a group of squadrons, I think, I don't remember how you break the numbers down from battalion and all that. There was a group, hundreds of men from Texas, and while they were being deployed, they did not, something went wrong, and they did not get the vaccine. Not one of them got Gulf War Syndrome. So there's pretty much no question that the vaccine caused it. So that's just one example of what happens when the government rushes a vaccine. So what happens when that stuff comes out? What are we faced with? I don't know. But I can tell you, the Bible talks about you're not going to be able to buy or sell. That's the English translation. You're not going to be able to buy or sell without this special mark. We've read it, near the eye or the forehead or the right hand, which is basically what? It could be your fingerprint, your retinal scan. We're thinking a mark, like in India, but maybe not. Maybe this is getting down to retinal stuff because it's like, you got an ID. Well, here, let's use your fingerprint. Here, let's just use your retina. You don't need all this, man. So we start out, you got the vaccine. And everybody's happy and life's amazing and we can go back to freedom. And then next is what? Well, we got an idea. We have, you know, some new chip that we can implement here, sponsored by such and such company group. Just put it under your skin. You're going to love it. You go everywhere you go. You're going to have every, you're going to everywhere you go, man. You go into any restaurant, lounge, public event, anything. You just scan. Tells you right who you are, shows your health status. Definitely not, you know, they'll tell you it's going to protect all your private information. No one's ever going to be able to hack that. Heck no. I mean, we know all that stuff, folks. And the Bible's pretty clear. Things get pretty ugly when that, whatever it is, starts to go to work. People get sick and they start, you know, having all kinds of breakouts and, you know, it's boils and bubbles and, you know, I mean, it's bad. So I'm just, you know, telling you to watch out. Let's see here. I'm going to get, I wasn't really ready for all this. And, boy, I love this when you can't. There we go. All right. I'm going to get there. I'll go back here. Sorry about this. I just am never quite. I kind of go where I don't know I'm going to go. And then I get King James. All right. Okay, let's get down to something a little more transliterated properly. Here we go. Interesting. That's interesting. Okay, so let's see how this works. Sorry about that. I'm not where I was. And he causes all, the small and the great, and the rich and the poor, and the freemen and the slaves, to be given a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. And then, of course, he does the, he who has ears to hear, let him hear. Well, we're still not there yet, right? I mean, we're getting there. It's kind of like, like I said, the right hand or the forehead. It's you got to remember that John is just standing back watching this. He's trying to translate this stuff, and he said that. He said, there's so many things. So did Daniel. There's so many things, I can't even explain it. They can't even, it's so far beyond where they were at the time, and we're maybe just starting to see some of this come around. And when we go, okay, let's, you know, the beast, let's just read Revelations 13, the beast from the earth. Let me see something here above that. What do we got? The beast from the sea. There you go. The beast from the sea is what? From possibly the people, the sea. Then I saw another beast coming. This is the beast from the earth. Coming up out of the earth, a beast is a system, okay? A beast system is, when you see beast in the Bible, it means it's a system, a powerful, like a government type of a system, just like a scarlet beast is a corrupt system. Okay, and when you see a woman riding a scarlet beast, then you have immorality with a corrupt system. Then I saw, so now we're on Revelations 13:11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth. And he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. He exercises all the authority of the first beast in his presence, so he's impressive, and he makes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose fatal wound was healed. Prepare for that one coming next, folks. Somebody gets some fatal wound and comes out of it. He performs great signs, so that even he makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth because of the signs which it was given him to perform in the presence of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who had the wound of the sword and has come to life. So we'll be exalting a man. And it was given to him to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast would even speak and cause as many as do not worship the image of the beast to be killed. That's going to be interesting. And then he causes all, the small and the great, the rich and the poor, the freemen and the slaves, to be given a mark on their right hand or on their forehead. Okay, now John, we don't know what he observed there, but he saw probably maybe scanning. Like I said, it could be fingerprints or retinal scans. He may have, they wouldn't have even thought of that back then. They wouldn't have the technology to even imagine it, but that could be well what it is. And he provides that no one will be able to buy or to sell except the one who has the mark, either the name of the beast or the number of his name. It says, here's the wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for the number is that of a man, and his number is 666. And in order to calculate that, people say, well, look at Ronald Wilson Reagan, three letters in each, you know, whatever. No. The way you calculate this stuff is likely through the Hebrew methodology. Hebrew, they have numbers assigned to each letter of the alphabet, and then they have different ways of multiplying, adding, and subtracting when you build a name. And I've played with it, but it's not, it doesn't come natural right away. You got to kind of learn it. So whoever this is ultimately going to be is maybe going to fit into that whole Hebraic numerology system, because otherwise how do you calculate the number of the beast? But the other thing that's really important is that it says he, and I've mentioned this, and I think this is important, where he says to buy, it says no one, okay, it says, and he provides that no one will be able to, quote, buy or sell except the one who has the mark, okay? So then, it didn't say without. It just says you can buy or sell with. Okay, but anyway, the point is, it says to buy or sell is agorazo and poleo, okay? So when we go into the, it's agorazo is G59 in the Strong's Greek, and it means to be in the marketplace or to attend in the marketplace or to business in the marketplace. This is the actual definition of the word agorazo. It's talking about being, and it keeps repeating, it's to be in it, to occupy it, to, you know, that's to go to the market. It's not the, where they translated it buy or sell. It's just not, it doesn't say that. Paleo, the sell, is the same thing. It says to participate in the marketplace, you know, to belong to the market. It's all the same stuff. It's not about whether you can buy or sell with your neighbor or barter. It's written that you can't be in the marketplace without it. Or, you know, and that is what? Amazon, Walmart, all these companies that are getting huge through this mess. This is the greatest transfer of wealth, redistribution of wealth ever in the history of the world. Any way you slice it. They're destroying all the small businesses. They're propping up these humongous businesses. You know, isn't it interesting these massive multi-billion dollar corporations are liberal? Why is that? I think it's once people get to that level, they realize they're afraid. It, you know, capitalism, geez, that means they won't be controlled and worshipped for who they are and what they have, and it means other people can compete with them. If they could just, you know, now that, you know, Bill Gates is worth $100 billion, if he could just simply shut the system down and keep himself homeostatic, I mean, they can't get rid of him. He's infiltrated every computer on Earth in one form or another. It's kind of like Oracle. Oracle writes all the programs for all of the U.S. government, from military to FBI to everything. They don't even get bids anymore. They say, please just be nice to us. Because there's, you know, to get bids, they have every possible top secret access and angle even imaginable. You know? And you get down to that point where we get, you know, our systems are so complicated that they're going to track your everything. I mean, I don't know how things, you know, people are getting the Apple phone, the iPhone. You know, you have your money on the phone. You want to use Apple Pay. You go to Japan, or I mean China, they have to have a phone. They have no choice. And they have to have an app on that phone. No choice. And if they tamper with that app, they get shut down. Their whole life gets shut down. They have to show that phone everywhere they go. It's being scanned everywhere they go. And folks, we're just teetering on the edge. The buy or sell thing, I was touching on that for the simplicity of the fact that, you know, there's only one thing that is biblically sound from start to finish, and that is precious metals. I mean, it's been there from the beginning of written human history, basically. Second chapter of Genesis, God introduces gold and tells you it's good, and he uses the best descriptive words available in the Old Testament. Tob, T-O-W-B, just the most complimentary, positive, uplifting, encouraging word to describe gold imaginable. And later on, he presents silver. You get a full economy. The entire world economy operates on this stuff. And as I've said, I mean, the world literally turns over gold. And then you've got, you know, even when the Exodus, God tells, you know, the Egyptians, after all these plagues, give them all you got. And they want all the gold and all the silver. And, you know, God said, all the gold and silver in the world's mine. It matters. It matters to him. It goes, you know, Solomon's temple was the largest accumulation of gold in the history of the world before or since, still to this day. More than we supposedly got in Fort Knox, which is another story. You go to Jesus' entry to this earth. His first gift that we have notated in the Bible, gold, frankincense, and myrrh by the wise men who came from the east, whatever that means. I mean, maybe they came up the valley and over, who knows. But there are stories of where that gold came from, too. You go to the book of Revelation. I mean, Jesus talks about gold on earth and money, and he distinguishes between man-made money, mammon, and gold and silver. People don't catch that. If you look up, you cannot serve God and mammon. See if I can find it here. It basically means it's the spirit of a self-made man. Hang on here. So basically it says, no one can serve two masters, for he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. Okay? Then the new translation, King James had it right, because it said, you can't serve two masters, you'll love the one and hate the other, hate the one, love the other, etc. And then it says, you cannot, let's get down here, you cannot serve God and, well, the Greek word is mammonas. So they use the word mammon, okay, which is the right word. Now, like NASB, that's supposed to be fairly accurate, uses wealth. That's not true. What is mammon? Mammon is the spirit of, it says riches personified and opposed to God. So the definition of mammon is riches where it is personified and opposed to God. Okay? That's the spirit of a self-made man. He says you can't serve God and riches that are personified in opposition to God. In other words, your God is money. You can't do that. You can't go. I mean, there was a guy who used to come in here who was involved with a certain organization, and he'd be like, Kevin, I'm a self-made man. And I'd be like, ooh, that makes it sting. I mean, it's like, ouch. Oh, you know, none of us are self-made. God made us all, and he gave us the ability to do well with what he gave us, you know. Without God, we're nothing. All wealth, is it Deuteronomy 19, I think? You know, all wealth comes from God. All the ability to earn wealth, all of it comes from God. So I guess what I'm saying there is to distinguish the two. People get confused between precious metals, which has the intrinsic value built within it. Now, can you, you know, money, hypothetically, is what we're using, but gold and silver is the ultimate money. It is neither good nor evil. Okay? It is absolutely inert. It's what you do with it that matters. That's all that matters. You can use money for the greatest thing in the world or the worst. It's, you know, and that's your heart condition, relationship with God. I can tell you over the years, spending all my years in banking and money, I've seen the people God gives wealth to, and they maintain it because they can. You know, all these people are like, oh, I wish God would give me more money. And why? Oh, because my finances are just messed up. Oh, yeah. And you're convinced that more money is going to fix that? Your behavior is not going to change. It'll just get worse. You show God, what's it say? He who's faithful with little will be given much. You show him that you can manage little. You don't say, God, I screwed up the little. Give me more to fix it. And you also take responsibility. If you made bad decisions, you don't blame it on other people. I mean, I've seen this over the years. I spent years in banking, thousands and thousands of clients, and I've watched people win lotteries. I've seen massive, you know, inheritances and everything, and I've seen people have businesses that really prosper. And there's a certain spirit that God blesses with finances because they're prepared for it. It's exactly what the Bible says. So where I was going real quick, without much time left, further ado, as they say, I mean, precious metals, we get to the end of the Bible, you know, everyone, it says on the day of wrath, the bad day thing, you know, they're throwing it in the streets because it doesn't buy salvation as we get to the end of the end. And then, of course, there's precious metals, gold and silver and many gemstones all over heaven. That's what it's primarily made of. And chrysolite. In living form, which is very interesting as well. That's a conversation for another day. But the bottom line is, there's one hard asset that's tradable that you need. And you need to have a substantial portion of your wealth in precious metals-based assets. You have to. If you let this system suck you all the way in, now they're removing all the cash. Folks, they're playing games bad with this stuff. There's no shortage of cash. When I talked about the getting the TARP funds that, you know, they get 2% on the overnight sweeps, I was in banking for years. That's the same with change. Every night, they sweep all the change from the banks, and it goes back to the Fed. They have arenas full of change. Arenas. There's no shortage of change. Where did it all go? I mean, really, come on. Did it all get destroyed? Do we all just throw our used change in the garbage? No. Every bit of change that's been out there that hasn't been damaged or destroyed, which is not much, still is out there. The Fed has swept it all up. They're pushing us fast into this currency or cashless currency. This is the do not let a good crisis go to waste mentality. You're here, folks. You're in the storm right now. You got decisions to make. Oh, but my stock and my this, and I don't want to pay taxes. Folks, 401ks are a scam, okay? All you're doing is deferring the inevitable. Do you know how much more tax they get out of those than if you paid monthly? Because people end up taking huge lump sums at some point. Everyone does it. And you jack yourself up. You slide up that scale and pay the higher tax bracket. Oh, unless you want it out before you're 59 and a half, and then you got to pay a penalty. Now, I'm telling you, a lot of people are taking their money out. They've had the CARES Act extended. You get 3 years to pay it back, split up in thirds. And the first tax time doesn't come till next April 15th. People are cashing out, getting metals. I'd recommend it. This live market's not over. Also, if you want to give us, if you've done business, you got some good experiences, if you can go online and do three, like, five-star reviews on the majors, you know, Google, Yelp, Facebook, whatever, you find, and just call us and prove it. We'll give you two good-looking Morgan Silver dollars. And that is a smart thing to do, especially with the value of them right now. It's definitely something we're probably looking at having to cancel. It's too expensive, but take advantage of it. It's probably, what is it, $60 to do three reviews? It's probably worth the time unless you're independently wealthy. So thanks for tuning in. Take care. God bless, and have a great night. Bye-bye.